paid a lot of attention to the alleged admission of responsibility. And I say alleged because I've heard a lot of analysts saying, well, we're not entirely convinced that the people that put up the admission of responsibility were the ones that were behind the bombings. They may or may not be, right? Well, this alleged admission was on a site frequented by radical Islamic militants with which I was vaguely familiar. However, I was very familiar with the internet service provider, which was hosting the site at the time before the site was pulled down within a few hours of the train bombings happening. It was hosted again by EV1.net out of Houston, Texas. And so that was, you know, no sort of surprise to me. In fact, several people have asked me recently, they said, well, were you surprised by these bombings? And my answer to them was shocked, yep, horrified, yep, saddened, definitely.
Surprised?
No. No, not on your life. I said, my only surprise would have been is if this hadn't happened. So some of the interesting stuff happens also is, you know, over the last 3 years I got into doing more and more and more of this, and I found that, and it almost has almost become like a secondary calling or ministry for me. My main calling is obviously serving the homeless women and families here in Albuquerque, but as I've got more involved in this, I have seen some awful things. Like earlier this year, I stumbled upon a site. When I say stumbled, I mean I can maybe say God almost led me, because I don't believe anything happens by chance. So I came upon this site called MoreSWAT.com, MAWSUAT.com. There was an address on it to write to, MoreSWAT, and no surprise, Hotmail.com. I say, jokingly, that every good terrorist has a Hotmail address, right? So as I went through the site, mostly it was in Arabic. I cannot, at least of yet, understand Arabic. And I would like to learn one day. Most of it was in Arabic. And however, I came to the video part of the site, and that was when I began to get really disturbed, because then I downloaded all the videos and watched some John.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Good evening, and welcome to the Freedom 21 radio program on the Radio Liberty Network. Very interesting show by our previous host, and I think the one thing that I took away from that is get up and do something. You know, so right now, you want to either write down our number, 1-888-245-4237, or call your friends or email your friends and have them, if they're not within a radio or a shortwave, to listen to us, check out the freedom21santacruz.net/radio page. You can get us on the internet, and it doesn't matter where you are. As long as you have internet access, you can get us. Or, as my young friends want me to say, f21sc.net. We've got a great show for you tonight. Our first guest I met at the Reno conference. You know, we're still glowing from the conference in Reno. It was incredible, and I hope if you get a chance that next year you get to go to the Freedom 21 National Conference, you'll learn so much, and it was just an incredible thing. But our first guest was one of the speakers there. Her name is Shu Bartholomew. She's a talk show host in Fairfax, Virginia. And I'm not going to tell you everything about her because, you know, she's a great speaker and she's really doing some great work. And I think I'd like to have her tell you about it. So are you with us?
Shu? Hello, Roy. Yes, I am.
Good to hear from you.
It's good to talk to you again.
Talk about how you came to be involved in the Reno Conference.
Well, I was invited. I didn't crash. actually, I had contacted Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, and had him on my show, and we had talked about it, and he sort of talked a little bit about sustainable development, but it was so outside what I was doing. I mean, I was really focused on homeowner association issues, and I talked to Tom over time, and he said, you know, we're having a conference, why don't you come out? And I said, yeah, I, you know, usually had a number of things. Well, this January I woke up, and there was an email from me first thing in the morning, and it was from Tom, and he said, would you speak at the conference? So I called him, and I said, yeah, but what do you want me to talk about? And so, you know, it sort of evolved from there, and it's an experience that I'll never forget. I'm really grateful to have had. I learned a lot. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Talk a little bit about your experience there. What, you know, what did you come away with from the conference?
Well, I came away, I think, after the first day. After listening to some of the speakers, I made the decision to broaden the scope of my show because we've always been so limited and so narrowly focused on one issue that I decided that we would expand a little bit and bring some of the other issues to my listeners and talk a little bit about, you know, the bigger picture, because we're just, homeowner associations, I believe, are just a very small piece of the puzzle.
Well, hang on to that thought. We're going to be right back, and check us out on the web or give us a call. Welcome back. We're talking to Shu Bartholomew, our talk show host from Fairfax, Virginia. You know, you talked about your particular issue. Tell us how you got involved in all this.
Well, I moved into one.
Uh-huh.
And when we bought our house many years ago, the real estate agent said, after we had a ratified contract, he said, oh, by the way, you do know there's a homeowners association here? And I said, no, what's that? Well, for so much a month, they will remove the trash and plow the snow. I said, all right, well, you know, do we not pay taxes? He said, yeah, but we do things differently here. So I said, all right, we had just moved to Virginia. And so we went to the settlement table, and the attorney shoves all these papers at us, and he says, sign this. What's that? And he says, this says you will, you know, you agree to abide by the rules of the Homeowners Association. I said, what's the Homeowners Association? Well, the rules are you pay so much a month and they'll pick up your trash and your snow. And I said, all right, fine. So we signed. And, you know, for about 8 years, we sort of, they left us alone, we left them alone. And then I started noticing that some of my neighbors were being harassed and abused by the association. I'll make it clear right off the bat that I have never, ever been targeted by the association. But I don't particularly like bullies. And so I got involved, and I went to the office, and I asked for some information, was told I couldn't have it because I wasn't on the board.
Was there a particular incident that made you move?
Oh, what moved into an apartment
that made you move from kind of sitting on the sideline to getting involved?
Yeah, they started harassing and abusing my neighbors. My neighbors were getting threatening letters.
For what kind of things?
Threatening letters for all sorts of things. I mean, stupid things. Nothing is intelligent in a homeowner's association. It could be parking. That was the big issue. They decided that they were going to enforce parking regulations, county zoning laws, with a roving tower. The tow truck driver got to decide who was in violation and who wasn't. And so the roving tower got to drive through and tow cars at will and hold the cars hostage. And I decided that, you know, there had to be a better way. And when my neighbors started getting letters about their grass not being, you know, neat and toys.
Okay. Impromptu. Boy, we're having some really fun technical.
Yeah, someone's trying to call in.
Hello. They know we're talking about important stuff. They should. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Anyway, they started getting letters and threatening letters, and they were all upset. So I just went to the office and started asking some questions. And when I asked and I was referred to documents, and I said, all right, well, can I see the documents? And they said, no, you have no need to see them. You're not on the board. And I said, all right, well, I can remedy that. So I ran for the board. And, boy, was that an eye-opener. And that's when I realized just how bad these things really were.
Now, did you get elected to the board?
Well, initially they ran. I didn't. I lost by one vote. But I got appointed to the board later. And then I was at church committees. I mean, I've done the whole gamut. I've done the board bit. I've done the committee bit. I've been chairing church committees. I've chaired committees and done all of them. I've seen it from both sides. Then I started working with homeowners outside of my association who were having problems, and I worked with an attorney, and when he died, I decided to bag it. And I ended up making the mistake of writing something to someone on the internet, and the next thing I knew, I was sort of not only working outside of my association, but all of a sudden I found myself on the national arena. And that was about 8 years ago, 9 years ago now. And it's just, it's been going crazy. If I got paid for it, I'd be really rich.
Well, yeah, I think that's the deal with all of our movements. You know, the other side are so well-funded, and like Tom DeWeese says, we're just a ragtag group of volunteers who, you know, are trying to make a difference.
Well, I think you can make a difference, and I know what Tom's saying, and we don't have the money to get organized. But you know what? We've got the votes. There are enough people out there who ought to go to the polls, and they ought to vote for the candidates who are going to best represent their interests. And we don't do that. I think, you know, with all the people who are doing their bit and getting the information out there, if we could educate people and get people to use the biggest tool they have, which is their voice, whether it be at the polls, whether it be, you know, talking to their legislators, whether it be going out to where the legislators are speaking on other issues, where they're campaigning, put it on the campaign, you know, put it on the campaign agenda. Make sure that it's a campaign issue. Bring it up. Ask them questions in public.
Talk about how you got into radio.
Well, I started off in TV, actually. Mm-hmm. I was crewing on cable access. And they said, oh, we have a radio station here. And I said, well, that's nice. You know, I really wasn't all that interested. I was just volunteering. And when I got involved on the national basis, it became apparent that there needed to be some way of reaching more people. And then I remembered this radio station that we had. So I went to them and I said, all right, I want to do a talk show. And what do I have to do? And they said, oh, we can't do that from here. I said, why not? And they said, oh, we just do music. And I said, well, I don't want to do music. I want to do a talk. And anyway, we went back and forth and back and forth. And finally, they allowed me to enroll in a class because, you know, they wouldn't let me in the building without having some certificate. So I became a licensed radio producer. And then I went to bat to get a radio slot, a 1 hour radio, a 2 hour radio slot, basically, and then I reduced it to 1 hour. But this was in the beginning. And they kept insisting that I couldn't do what I was doing. It just couldn't be done. You know, now this is my fifth year on my second show. I did another show. I co-hosted another show initially for 8 months. And I had the Washington Post did a feature article on me. So it can be done. Don't take no for an answer, ever. It can be done if you think that you can contribute something somehow.
What was it that catapulted you into the national scene on the whole Homeowners Association?
Well, when I was working with my friend, the attorney who died, and we were working with clients. I mean, I was actually helping him with the clients, going to court, doing some of the legal research and all of that. And when he died, I sort of was just floating aimlessly, and I thought I would do something a little more meaningful. I made the mistake of deciding to get on the computer and figuring out how to turn it on. And I responded to something that somebody had mentioned, something on a newsgroup about homeowner associations. And so I wrote in, and all of a sudden I had all these people writing back saying, where'd you live? And they wanted to know who I was and how come I knew so much about associations. And, you know, so the next thing I knew was I was sort of on the national scene. And it just sort of went from there. You know.
What were some of the kinds of things you were dealing with?
People were calling me up with problems. You know, my board is doing this. Can they do this? People are being foreclosed. I mean, if you want to get into the horror stories, Roy, I'll be happy to tell you.
Oh, please.
You know, but there's, you know, if you want to put this in context of the bigger picture, we can do that as well. Some of the horror stories, I think, well, first of all, what your listeners need to know is that homeowner associations across the board tend to have greater powers than the government has. Here are two powers that, you know, the government could only dream about having. Number one, the board can come up and make up a rule, okay, and then they can decide that you violated that rule. And they can fine you. And if you don't pay that fine, they can then foreclose. In most states, they can foreclose non-judicially.
With no hearing, no nothing.
No going in front of a judge. They can just sell your house on the courthouse steps. Think about what a wonderful tool this is. You don't like your neighbor. Your neighbor happens to be the wrong color, the wrong race, the wrong religion, you know, has the wrong family, you know, whatever it is, that they're different, and you don't like them. Maybe they drive
the wrong color.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You see, it doesn't matter because even though we have these federal laws that says it is illegal for you to discriminate, when you're in a homeowners association, they can come up with something so insanely ridiculous as your garage door was open for 10 minutes and 12 seconds and we have a 10 minute limit and therefore you're in violation.
What gives them that kind of power?
The governing documents. A lot of it is in what's known as the covenants or the covenants, conditions, and restrictions, commonly known as CC&I. And this forms the basis of a contractual agreement that you have with the association. So although it is a government with taxing power and with the power to basically fine you and rule your life, it's not subject to constitutional protections because it is a contract. It's diabolically clever, Roy.
Mm.
It's an extremely clever way of doing things.
When did these kinds of things come on the scene?
Well, they've been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They started off back in the 1800s.
Oh.
When you had a few, and they were basically the purview of the very wealthy. And the very wealthy would go into these voluntarily, and their covenants were exclusionary. No people of certain racial backgrounds, no religious backgrounds. I mean, they wanted to keep it very waspish.
Hmm.
Well, the courts came and struck those down, and they said, you know what, well, you cannot do that because that's discrimination, and it is illegal, it is unconstitutional. So they took those out. So that reason, the initial reason for having associations kind of disappeared. The reason they're using today is it's a form of double taxation. When they started being mass-produced in the 1960s and 70s, they started off because you had this flight from urban areas. People were moving out to the suburbs in search of the American dream, which was the little house with the white picket fence. And as they moved out into the suburbs allegedly, the local municipal governments were not able to financially handle the influx of new people. And so you had one land planner, basically, a guy by the name of Byron Hankey, who decided, hey, you know, we can help these guys out. We'll just privatize all of the infrastructure. We'll just say that, all right, if you allow them to move in here and if you allow them to build, what we will do is we will set up these covenants and we will give the streets and in some cases the sewers and the street lighting and trash removal and snow removal and parks and recreation and all of that stuff, we will give it to the private sector and we'll let the homeowners control that themselves.
Well, we're going to take another quick break, and if you have any questions for our guests, call us at 888-245-4237. We'll be right back to talk about what your homeowners association might be doing to you.
While some of our affiliate stations take a commercial break, let me take a few moments to tell the rest of you a bit about Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a freedom policy center that celebrates the principles of self-governance and individual liberty which inspired the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. It's a group of individuals who advance the freedom of all by promoting and strengthening the practice of constitutional administration in local, state, and national government. The Freedom 21 Santa Cruz mission is to advance the principles of freedom to individuals, community, and government through public discourse, community outreach, and grassroots education programs. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. Objectives of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz and its participants include the following. Focus public attention on the value of the freedoms guaranteed to Americans by the Constitution of the United States of America, and encourage individual and community interest in protecting those freedoms. Provide opportunities for political discourse among organization membership and the community. Promote and strengthen government responsiveness to the principles of freedom. Educate the public about local, national, and international threats to individual freedom and the U.S. Constitutional Republic.
invite Americans to unite against the advance of international collectivist movements that cause poverty, oppression, and a degraded earth. And to create a model for successfully promoting and ensuring U.S. constitutional government in a local community. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. As a listener of tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show, you have exclusive access to our online audience participation center at freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Here are just some of the value-added features you'll get by logging on while you're tuned in. Get free access to the research and articles that have contributed to tonight's show. See an important multimedia presentation titled The Philosophy of Liberty. Email the host with your comments. Get special discounts on featured books like the ever-popular Pocket Constitution. Register to receive a free subscription to AdvanceBulletin.net, which provides commentary and analysis on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. So get more. Log on while you're tuned in and advance freedom at freedom21santacruz.net/radio.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 radio program. I just wanted to throw another thing in there after that little commercial break. I was talking to Michael Shaw today, and he was telling me that the Understanding Sustainable Development, a Guide for Public Officials, has gone international. In England, it's going crazy because, you know, they're trying to get out of the Union, the European Union. And so, you know, if you really want something comprehensive on, you know, what we're always talking about, check out the website, freedom21santacruz.net, and check out that guide. It's an incredible piece of work. Anyway, we're talking to Shu Bartholomew about Homeowners Association, and we haven't even got into the scary, you know, Shu, what I don't know, I want to say cracks me up or fascinates me about doing this show. Every time I talk to people, what they tell me about is, you know, truth is stranger than fiction. Talk about some of the kinds of crazy things that you've heard of or you know that homeowners associations have done to people.
Well, I mean, crazy things, just absolutely bizarre, absurd, ridiculous, is sending people violation notices because the flower pot on their front porch is cracked. Dusty mailboxes. And their dogs weigh too much than the allowed weight limit.
What happened to that person?
Well, you know what? There was one case, and don't laugh about this one, guys. It's not funny, it really is.
Well, because it was a real person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's happened so many times. But the covenants will say you're allowed to have one pet or one dog or whatever, but it cannot weigh more than X number of pounds. Well, so somebody decides, you know what, that dog looks like it weighs more than the covenants allow. And so they'll, in some cases, they've actually gone to court and had court-ordered weigh-ins for the dog.
Oh,
and the dog has been, you know, jumps off the scales on the bench, and it's between, you know, an inch or an ounce or two below the weight limit to an ounce or two above the weight limit. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous. But the thing is, you've got people who are in a position of power, all of a sudden, they've never had power in their life, and they don't know how to handle it. But they've got so much power that they do. They make their, you know, they can make life really miserable. I always say that living in a homeowners association is a bit like being nibbled to death by a duck.
You talked at the conference about an elderly woman who you worked with.
I've worked with a lot of people, yeah. In fact, some of your listeners may, and this one was on 2020, and, you know, the newspapers, the media just went crazy over this one. 82-year-old widow, whose house was mortgage-free. She bought it, she paid cash for it, and she forgot to pay her annual assessment. And she was in the hospital, and her best friend died, and it just sort of went out of her mind. The following year, she got a notice from the association saying, you know, now owe us $814, or whatever it was. It turned out that the annual assessments were $400. So they billed her for the $400 of the year before and the $400 of that year, plus $12 in late fees or interest. I have no idea how they came up with it. But when she got the bill, she realized that she'd forgotten to pay it. So she wrote a check, and she dropped it off at the office, which is what she was supposed to do. Well, they decided they were not going to accept the check.
Because they just felt like it.
They don't have to accept. This is the scary part. They don't have to accept the check. Now, she got billed, and she submitted the exact amount on the bill. They refused to accept it. They turned it over to an attorney, and, of course, the attorney makes a lot of money doing this. So they started sending her notices. They didn't send her notices. They sent her dead husband notices. Now, her dead husband never lived in that house. So she assumed that it was just junk mail, and she tossed it out. And what it was a notice of foreclosure. And so they actually sold her $150,000 house on the courthouse steps for $5,000. The first she knew about it was when the new owner went to the sheriff and said, I want that lady evicted. I want her out of my house. And so here it is, before 8 o'clock in the morning, she's in her nightgown, there's a knock at the door, she goes to the door, and there's the sheriff standing there with an eviction notice in one hand, and a moving van parked behind him. And they came, and she was allowed to take two changes of clothes. I mean, not only did they sell the house, but they wouldn't let her take any of her belongings. Two changes of clothes.
Well,
and that was all she was allowed to take.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Shu Bartholomew on the dangers and crazy things that homeowners associations do. And if you don't, you know, I mean, we're going to cover a little bit on this hour, but check out her website, www.onthecommons.com, and you'll be amazed at one, all the work that she's doing. And, you know, just some of the crazy things that are going on out there. And it all ties in to sustainable development.
I think it does.
Talk about that.
Well, if you look at what sustainable development, my understanding of what sustainable development is part of it is the actual land planning. And they're trying to basically save or prohibit use of huge chunks of land and keep them as wilderness, but then force people to live on smaller and smaller lots. If you guys live in any place that's sort of semi-metropolitan, look at what they're doing with construction. One of the latest fads that they're using is something called new urbanism. Now remember at the beginning I told you people left the urban centers because they wanted a little elbow room,
mm-hmm.
and they moved out to the suburbs. Well, now they're bringing the urban core out to the suburbs. They're demolishing the older houses. They're replacing them with new urbanist communities. These are also called neoclassical. They're also called pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods. Yes. They don't like cars. They don't want cars. They want people to walk to public transportation. They want people to walk down to the local grocery store, to the drugstore, to whatever store. All of that stuff is going to be within walking distance.
Well, in some places, I've even heard of, you know, live work.
Yeah.
So your work is right there. You don't go anywhere.
Well, you don't go anywhere. Either that, or if you have to commute, in places like where I live, I mean, a lot of people work downtown, and so what they'll do is they'll bring out a subway station, and then they'll take down all the older houses, they'll tear them down, and they'll replace them with high-rises. And my question is, you know, when are we going to get smart and stop lying to people? I mean, what they're telling them is, guys, you don't have to do anything. You don't even have to get wet. All you do is slide down the banisters straight into the train in downtown. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to go out.
Well, we're going to take another quick break. We'll pick up right after that with that right after when we come back. Welcome back. We're talking to Shu Bartholomew on what homeowners associations are doing to us and its tie into sustainable development. Go ahead, continue.
Well, I think that without having, I think homeowner associations are the vehicle to make all of these pedestrian friendly, if you will, developments work. Because everything is piled one on top of the other. You've got these huge towers. You've got all these stores. Everything is privately owned. You don't go out on the streets. You sort of walk to the stores. You walk home. You walk to the movies. Problem with that is that, and you don't have cars. I mean, you have one car. You go through an alley. The problem is they're building the streets much narrower. You don't have one of the characteristics of a new urbanist house is that there are no sidewalks. I mean, there are no front yards. So the house, if you have a house, if it's a single family or townhouse, there is no front yard. You're right on the sidewalk. You get absolutely no privacy. You're cheek to jowl, and you can access, you know, maybe you can use the alleyway in the back. It's a form of social engineering as well, because one of the things they want to do is force you to spend time with your neighbor. They want to cluster mailboxes. They want you to walk out there when your neighbors are out there. You know, Roy, I don't know about you, but I've never had any problems meeting my neighbors. If I want to meet them, I don't want to be forced into it.
Well, I think that's, you know, part of the whole thing is to control.
It is the control. It absolutely is social, you know, it is control. Social engineering, it's controlling land use, it's controlling rights, because along with these associations come these rules and regulations. And if they don't like you, Roy, they're going to get you out, because they've also got that tool. They can concoct some alleged violation, infraction of something.
Yeah, my car dripped a little oil or something.
Oh, no, you don't have a car.
Oh, that's right.
My bike
is the wrong color.
Yeah, they don't like your shirt. They don't like your kid's tricycle.
Or I planted the wrong kind of flowers in my garden.
Or you left your Christmas lights out too long. I mean, you know, in some places don't even allow that. Yeah, you don't have a garden because you're right on the sidewalk, because that's new urbanist. Problem is that there's no place, you know, parking is really impossible. In some cases, they've had a really hard time getting emergency vehicles through because the streets are so narrow. When the streets are that narrow, think about this, when the streets are that narrow, they're not going to be accepted into the street system because they don't meet code, which means they have to be privately owned, which means you have to have some form of an association responsible for maintaining the streets, parking pads, you know, anything else along those lines. Beyond that, take that a step further. When you have such small areas that you can walk to, your choices are taken away. You cannot have six grocery stores. You're going to have one grocery store. There's only business for one, if that. You're only going to have one drugstore. You're going to only have one dry cleaner. And when there is no, you know, when there is a monopoly, when there is no competition, guess what happens to prices?
Do whatever they want.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if you were selling bread and you were the only game in town,
$10 a loaf.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeez.
So this is not, there's nothing good in it for the individual. None of this is being done or designed with the individual homeowner in mind. None of it.
Well, we have a caller on the line.
All right.
Welcome, caller. You have a question.
Hi, Brian.
Oh, hi, Jeannie.
And, Shu, it's so nice to hear you.
Hi,
met
Jeannie.
You at Reno Freedom 21 Conference. This is an example of a woman believing in something and saying, I'm going to do it, when everyone else said it couldn't be done.
Well, Jeannie, you're giving me chills.
And I listened to Shu, your first show I listened to last Saturday. And, of course, Michael Shaw was on, and it was very well done. I like your format and the way you talk. It's very down to earth. You know, there's a video out, and everyone should get it. It's called The Colony, and John Ritter stars in that video.
Yes.
And it's actually... they go into a homeowners association colony, and it's devastating when they get in there. Everyone should watch it. It's called The Colony, starring John Ritter. Now, I have to talk about, Shu, this homeowners association that I'm in, but it's not called the homeowners association. It's called La Selva Beach Improvement Association.
Always watch the terminology, right?
Now, the last meeting, they voted in. Now, get this. There's 666 members. Isn't that ironic? 666
yeah, that's
members.
A significant number, huh?
And this is a quarterly meeting, and only about 12 to 15 members come, and they actually vote on the bylaws and the new regulations regarding La Selva Beach. And of course, most of them are hardcore socialist Marxists. So they just voted on that there was to be no electronic recording. In other words, no videos and no tape recorders being used at the meeting. And, of course, it was, I think, 11 to 1. I was the one dissenting on that vote.
Yeah, Jeannie.
And, of course, I said to them, to the board, you should be transparent because you have 666 members. You should be on public television, and you should show them what's happening in this community. So there again, they're stifling what's happening in the association. Do you have that at all, Shu?
Oh, that's virtually with all of them. And let me tell you something. You do have laws governing governing associations in California. In fact, right now, the California Law Revision Commission, the CLRC, is studying associations and trying to figure out what to do with them. What I would recommend that you do is contact them and ask them to enact legislation giving you the right to record all meetings. Now, that's something we have in Virginia. And although board members don't like it, when the law was passed, and yet most people don't use it, but the fact is that they cannot prevent you from recording the meetings. And if you use just where if you ask for the legislation to just say record the meetings, then they're not going to be playing games. That covers every form of recording. But I would contact the CLRC. They're scratching their heads. They're trying.
What is the CLRC?
The California Law Commission.
Okay.
Law Revision Commission.
Okay. Hey, Jeannie, why do you think? Well, what are some of the things that have gone on that might, you know, have them not want people to have a recording of what's going on in their meetings?
Well, there was one meeting where we never have an American flag at the meeting. So I made a motion that we would have a display our American flag. Well, I did get a second on it, and it just squeaked by having that American flag. Well, then I put another motion on that we can say the Pledge of Allegiance. Not even a second. It didn't even get on the floor. And I'm wondering, I wonder what their allegiance is to. So there again, every meeting, there's no American flag. So I holler out, where's the American flag? And they say, well, it's locked up in a room. I would have to break the window to get the flag. That was the last excuse I had at the last meeting. And I'm thinking, hey, but what happened is the social director did go out and get a small flag while we were just starting our meeting. And she put it in a little holder so there would be American flag. There's things like that. Oh, pollution. Like we put our porch lights on. And actually, I think it was, well, he's now the president, but he was saying, well, I like to see the stars at night. And the porch lights, it's not dark, so I can't see the stars. So it would be nice not to have porch lights on. Of course, that's in the United Nations Treaty. It's called pollution, light pollution. And I spoke up and I said, you mean to tell me that you're going to tell me in the evening that I should have my porch lights off? And do you realize the last month in La Selva Beach, we had 17 break-ins in cars. And you know why? Because it's so dark.
Let me tell you something. In California, you have a lawsuit called Francis T. Francis T. lived in a condominium, and she asked the board, and of course, in a condominium, the owners don't own anything. It's owned collectively. And she asked for a light, and the board refused to put a light out. They wanted it dark. Well, Francis T. was raped, and so she sued. And she won. The thing is that, you know, you've got, this is the thing. If you live in a homeowners association, if you live in any kind of an organization where other people have the power over you, you almost have to make a religion of knowing what your rights are. And that's where it starts. Your governing documents should give you all the rights. Then you go to the state laws and you go to the lawsuits that have been filed and won and all of that. And you start building up, and you've got your rights, and you protect them. So you've got Francis T. to fall back on. They can't, you know, they can't do that. They can't turn your lights out.
I was thinking, these homeowners associations, they're really, it's a wonderful ploy for the elitists and the sustainable communities, because what you have in the homeowners association, you have an already made up sustainable community.
That's right.
And all they have to do is control the board of directors, and you have a Soviet council over a homeowners association, which is a sustainable community. It's a beautiful setup.
You want me to scare you even more?
No, but go ahead.
Just think of all the kids who are growing up watching their parents sort of roll over, play dead, be fearful. I mean, do you know how many people have called me, you know, who are being harassed and abused by their associations? They're in tears, they're crying, they're scared to death. And their kids are seeing this. And they're growing up believing that this is normal, that in an association, if you live in a home, that this is the way to live. Because this is the way their parents are living.
Well, I compliment you, Shu. You stood up for your rights. You know that what you did was right. And this is, everyone has to believe in themselves that what they're doing is right. And you have to have a passion for what you're doing is right and for freedom. And I think you're a great lady, and I admire your spirit, Shu.
Well, thank you so much, Jeannie, and I admire yours. And I want to put in a plug for another book. If you like reading, I would highly recommend a book called Simply the Association by Bentley Little. And Bentley Little is a horror writer. He writes horror stories. And I interviewed Bentley Little a couple of years ago when I read his thing. I think that his book would make a great movie right along with The Colony.
And it's called The Association?
It's called The Association, and the author's name is Bentley Little.
Now, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you still live in a homeowners association?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Are you making waves?
Who, me?
Yes.
Do you think I'd make waves?
You got them all tamed now.
Actually, you know, the thing is, quite often they'll call me and some of the board members will and say, well, what do you think and what do you suppose we should do about this? And some of them don't like me because they can't get away with what they think they'd like to be getting away with. But the thing is, you have to know your rights. You have to do your homework.
And speaking of the rights, it's my understanding that, you know, your rights are there. They exist. Those documents that they draw up are supposed to be there to protect your rights.
Well, the documents are called covenants, conditions, and restrictions. The latest spin on all of this, because we do have a lot of spins on things, is, you know, what I'm going to tell you is if it's not in the governing document, then the right is yours because you didn't agree to give it up. If it says that you cannot have a dog that weighs more than 40 pounds and you agree to it, you know, whether you read it or not is immaterial, but the fact is the law is going to look at this as a contract. Now, if there's nothing in there about that, it doesn't mean that you've given up that right. What the association industry is arguing today is if the right is not specifically spelled out in the governing documents, then the right belongs to the association. No, it does not. The right belongs to the individual. You have that right. When you buy a house, when you buy real estate, you buy a bundle of rights. And unless you have given up any one of those rights, they belong to you. So don't let anyone say, well, it's not in the governing documents, therefore you don't have the right. We decide. No. That's not the way it works. And let me tell you, while you were talking about flags and you wanted horror stories, you know that there's a Marine there are a lot of people who are being harassed, abused, and foreclosed on by the Homeowners Association for having the temerity to fly an American flag on their own property. There's Richard Alton down in Virginia. It cost him almost $500,000. Because he flew a flag, and I was just talking to George Andres down in Florida. They almost foreclosed on him because he flew a flag. They wanted to take his house away.
And what did they say? Oh, we don't like your flag. You can't fly.
Well, there's nothing in the governing documents that says you can't have a flag. What they usually say is, you know, it's an unapproved structure, or it's a yard ornament, or you didn't get permission. And so they go along on that basis, and what's happening is the judges are going along with that, and that is pure wrong.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Shu Bartholomew on what homeowners associations are doing to you, but first, a quick break.
Policies, procedures, and laws enacted by local government and non-government organizations in the name of diversity, community, and Earth are diminishing individual liberty, degrading ecology, and threatening human life and happiness in towns across the nation. You've likely already experienced some of the consequences of policies that are approaching full implementation, with little public discourse or voter input. Have you experienced any of the following? Restricted freedom of mobility as you sit for hours in gridlock traffic. Mounting limitations on, or even loss of, your private property. An engineered housing crisis that you're being told must be solved with your money, by those who caused it. Loss of parental authority to a government education system that seems to emphasize social indoctrination over education. Transitioning of water resources to regional control by non-elected bureaucrats with subsequent engineered shortages. Heavy influence of international and non-government organizations over local policy, at the expense of representative democracy. You're not alone in recognizing these and other symptoms of our diminishing freedoms. The adverse consequences of collectivist policies and laws enacted by local government bodies are affecting almost every citizen in your town. Many have noticed and are ready to act to advance individual liberty, family autonomy, a vibrant ecology, and a strong economy. They're doing this by turning their individual initiative into local action for national impact. To find out how you can join others to advance freedom, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. That's freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232. You might be wondering if Freedom 21 Santa Cruz is a liberal or a conservative organization. Are they left or right, Republican or Democrat? But you'll find that none of these one-dimensional labels applies to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, nor to many of its participants. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz dialogue doesn't take place in a left-right, liberal-conservative dialectic, but on a spectrum between liberty and tyranny. Freedom 21 Santa Cruz participants include people from all political parties, religions, races, and backgrounds who are united in the pursuit of individual liberty and the protection of our U.S. Constitutional Republic. To find out how you can donate to or participate in Freedom 21 Santa Cruz, please log on to freedom21santacruz.net or call 831-684-2232.
Welcome back to Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio. We're talking to Shu Bartholomew on the devastating things that homeowners associations do to people and how they're trying to take away, or they're taking away, your inalienable rights. What are some of the kinds of calls that you're getting now on your show?
I don't take calls on my show.
Ah.
I only have one phone line, and usually my guest is on it. And so I get a lot of emails from people. And, I mean, they run the gamut from, you know, I want to build a shed, or they allowed my name. In fact, the latest one I got was they allowed my neighbor to build a shed, and they won't allow me to build an identical one. And of course, a lot of the decisions are made by people who supposedly are volunteers and really have no background in architecture or anything like that. But their decisions are arbitrary and they're capricious. People will do things not realizing and understanding that they have to go through and get permission to plant another rose bush. They don't understand that the associations have the kinds of powers that they have, and they find themselves running afoul of it. One of the big problems that I hear from is people who request information, particularly financial information about the association, and they're denied that. Remember, I told you when I went in, I ran for the board because I asked for information and was told I couldn't have it because I wasn't a board member. So I said, well, we can remedy that.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran for the board. But people want to know where the money's going.
Right.
And they won't tell you that. You have a right to know where your money's going. It's your money.
You talked about broadening some of the things you're going to be doing on your show. Talk a little bit about what you're going to be doing.
Well, you know, I've never really looked at what the government's doing, for instance. And there are many abuses that are taking place within the government. I mean, I've covered eminent domain. That's not something that associations and especially the recent Kelo decision, that's been on the forefront here. A lot of governments, smaller local municipal governments, have began emulating associations. There's a woman right now who was fined $1,000 a day by her real government. She doesn't live in an association. So the fines mounted up to $1.8 million.
$1.8 million,
almost $2 million, and the village council, or whatever it is they're called, sold the liens that they had filed on her property for $300,000. The properties were worth $1 million. She went into court to file bankruptcy, and the judge agreed with the county. I mean, the village got what it wanted. She lost everything she had. She's been reduced down to $1,000 a month of Social Security checks.
Well, we're about to run out of time here. I really want to thank you for taking your time to be with us. And please check out Shu's website at onthecommons.com, and you can find a way to listen to her show on the internet and, you know, get more information on the kinds of things that are going on with homeowners associations. And as she broadens out her show as well. So thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for asking me, Roy.
Talk to you again.
Take care. Bye.
We're going to be right back. We're going to have our guest, Dr. Madeline Cosman, talking about sustainable health.
The views expressed on tonight's Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio show are the opinions of neither this station nor its sponsors. In fact, they're not necessarily the opinions of Radio Liberty or of Freedom 21 Santa Cruz. The views expressed by the host are those of the host. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests are theirs. Whether you agree or disagree, please join in. To participate, you can call during caller segments at 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 888-245-4237. Or you can go to our online audience participation center at www.freedom21santacruz.net/radio. That's freedom21santacruz.net/radio. Now let's start advancing freedom.
Welcome back to the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz radio program. And when you do check us out on the web at freedom21santacruz.net, one thing that you definitely want to look at is the Understanding Sustainable Development, a Guide for Public Officials. It's probably one of the most important documents that if you want to learn all about what's going on with sustainable development, it's a great place to start. There's also, and I'm just going to read this real quick, it's America's being transformed from the land of the free to the land of the controlled via mechanisms that target the middle class. Knowing reality, the threat, and the potential is the foundation for restoring and preserving liberty. And if you, Michael Shaw and the folks here just put together a radio series from the Freedom 21 Santa Cruz Radio entitled The War on Reason, and it's featuring talks on abolishing private property by Dr. Michael Kaufman. Just a bunch of folks on there, so you know, go to the web, check it out, pick that stuff up, and you'll be better armed. And you talk about being better armed, hold on to your hat, because our next guest is going to talk about things that even at the conference in Reno, people who are seasoned folks in, you know, fighting sustainable development were just blown away by her presentation. Our guest is Dr. Madeline Cosman. Dr. Cosman is an attorney known for her work in medical law. She's the president of the Medical Equity, Inc., located in San Diego, California. She's been a speaker for medical meetings and bar associations, and she's written books, and she's just an amazing woman. Madeline, are you there?
I'm very much here. It's a pleasure to work with you.
Oh, the pleasure is really mine. I've been looking forward to talking to you again after our wonderful conversations and listening to you at Reno.
Terrific.
For our listeners, talk about what your presentation was at Reno.
The name of the presentation was Sustainable Medicine. And very few people know about sustainable medicine here, even among physicians. In fact, most physicians know nothing about it. But people in Europe know a great deal. And if any one of our listeners wants to go on to Google, just try putting in the two words, sustainable medicine, and you'll get something extraordinary, something like 5,850,000 references, because sustainable medicine is the attempt by the Agenda 21 proponents to completely transform our ideas of high-tech scientific medicine, and particularly to eliminate certain important high-tech medical devices and techniques. And I used, just as an example, the extraordinary medical plastics that we're all accustomed to seeing, the little plastic tubes that are used for breathing tubes or for renal dialysis or for cardiac catheterization or for feeding tubes or for blood transfusions. The flexible plastic is so common in hospital rooms and in emergency treatment that we take it completely for granted. But 50 years ago, this did not exist. The only type of tubings were made of either metal or perhaps glass or ceramic, and therefore, of course, they were painful to install.
Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. We're back with Dr. Madeline Cosman talking about sustainable medicine, which is usually when we hear sustainable, it's not really sustainable. Continue, please.
Certainly. In any event, those who want to see sustainable medicine essentially say that high-tech medicine is impossible for everyone to have because it's too expensive and it's inappropriately distributed. Therefore, no one shall have it. And as an example, the beautiful, intelligent, actually ingenious flexible plastics that are used throughout medicine and surgery and have actually saved the lives of, without exaggeration, billions of people worldwide. These plastics, which are treated with a particular chemical called phthalate, are being banned throughout the world. Greenpeace, a group called Healthcare Without Harm, and various rather leftist, radical environmentalist groups have said that these plastics, namely the phthalate-treated plastics used in medicine, which have been used, examined, and tested for at least 50 years.
And in all kinds of areas, right? I mean, with kids and troops in battle and just in all kinds of uses.
Exactly. That is, every time one sees an ambulance, there are flexible plastics within it. Every time one sees a roadside accident, the people have the tubes for breathing or intravenous fluids that are made out of these marvelous, ingenious, flexible plastics, which are PVC tubes treated with phthalate. Well, a little bit of phthalate leaches out into the bloodstream, but it harms no one. But Greenpeace has maintained that it could possibly harm some people, therefore it shall be used for no one. This is the old precautionary principle. If there is any possible risk, there shall be no action, which of course makes any sort of invention, any sort of creativity, any sort of production impossible, because everything is ordinarily risk and balance. But if they start by saying there shall be no risk, then of course there can be no benefit. In any event, what they have said is that phthalates leach out into the bloodstream, and they have tested this on, if you please, rats and alligators. And they found that the poor little rats and the poor little alligators with huge amounts of phthalates...
Hold on, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Madeline Cosman about the ridiculous notion of sustainable medicine. Please continue.
You're absolutely right that this is ridiculous, and your listeners will recognize precisely how ridiculous when I tell you that the experiments that had been done, not on people, because for people there's no problem whatsoever, but the experiments had been done on rats and alligators, and apparently the rats and the alligators had shriveled penises. Therefore, they were worried, Greenpeace and Doctors for Sustainable Development were worried that this might be the effect upon little boys. Therefore, because infants, prenatal, or I should say the neonatal rescue tubes used for these premature infants might conceivably affect the genitalia of baby boys, this is reason to eliminate the flexible plastics from all of medicine and surgery.
When
now,
they do these
crazy
kind of tests on the animals, don't they expose them to more than any human being could possibly be exposed to over a lifetime?
Absolutely. And not only do they do that, but in fact, the Surgeon General has said phthalates are safe. The FDA has said phthalates are safe. But the Environmental Protection Agency has said, ha-ha, maybe phthalates are carcinogens, and maybe they will harm the testes of infant boys.
Maybe.
In which case, get rid of them. Now, this is crazy, but Baxter International, which creates about 500 million of these PVC plus phthalate-treated tubes and medical bags every year, Baxter has caved in to this political pressure. And this is a disaster for medicine and surgery. It's a disaster for the patients because there's no equally good, equally tested, and affordable substitute.
So what's going to happen?
Pardon me?
What's going to happen?
Well, they're looking for a substitute, but and in fact, in Europe, there are some substitutes, but it is highly likely that these substitutes, which have not been anywhere as well tested and as examined, are going to prove to be, under the precautionary principle, potentially dangerous, in which case they also will be banned. The basic intent is not simply to get rid of these plastics, although I shouldn't really say that so easily, because there are several groups that, in fact, are dedicating themselves to... Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.